is Dojo.
You're really taking that Han Solo thing to heart. I think we're just going to do Han Solo impressions for the next 40 minutes.
It's more great of an interpretive. For an audio-only podcast, too. Just visual interpretations of Han Solo for an hour.
Cody might like that, hey, mother?
He would. Quite enjoy that.
What's going on at the beaten path today?
400 things today. I probably have a very annoyed employee down there because she had to take over when I left. So,
one of the perks of being the boss, you get to make time for a business podcast.
For bossy things.
Bossy things.
Yeah, but unfortunately, I left stuff on my machine that she has to check on. So impressed she was not.
Sean, have you made it in there yet?
I haven't. No, I was in Wainwright yesterday for 40 minutes. In between dropping things off and picking things up. And then the day before I was there for 2 hours, but then I got trapped in there. So nonetheless, I fully anticipate coming to pick up, I need a new crib board, and like there's like a wide selection of crib boards there. So that's on my to-do list. When I'm there for longer than 120 minutes at a time.
I recommend you design your own. Don't do pre-bought.
No. See, the thing is for me is like, I like, that's like part of the experience is you go in and you just see what's available at that time. And then something speaks to you. Mm. If I designed it, I would have no idea.
That's how I do my Christmas shopping. All of my Christmas shopping is I go in, I see what's available. And then I go, well, I guess that's what I'm getting. Because I always go on the last day.
You go down to the local 7-Eleven and see what you can procure.
Everybody gets shops. A big bite.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to this week's edition of, I was going to say Beyond a Beaten Path.
Beyond a Biz Dojo.
Beyond the Biz Dojo.
This week's.
The Biz Dojo brought to you by Beyond a Beaten Path. And this week we are fortunate to be joined by the founder, CEO. You basically do all the things at Beyond a Beaten Path. I don't think I've ever actually asked you what your inspiration. I mean, I know you're an artist, and that's obviously the core of you know what you do. But like, what actually inspired you to start Beyond a Beaten Path?
Headstones. Actually, it was headstones.
Like
I want
the
to
band or
making... no, like that. Like
it was Tweeter
in
the Monkey
cemetery.
Man.
She was hard up for cash.
That's right. Weirdly enough, I used to like to go visit cemeteries. It's something I like to just go do. And I like headstones, I like unique headstones. So I like the idea of creating headstones. So initially, we started researching the equipment needed to do that. And that's where we found the CO2 lasers. And that's where we started researching that. But once we started looking into it, actually breaking into the headstone market is, it's so hard. They don't let you in. Like the big guys that run it, they make sure they run it. And we do some small headstones. But to get in at large scale, I remember when we used to live in BC, we used to drive through Falkland, BC, and they had a little headstone shop on the side of the road. I just loved that shop. I used to, sometimes we'd pull over so I could just look, sit from the car and look at the cool headstones. So that was the initial start. And then once we started researching how hard it was to actually break into that market, then it was, we went and demoed the equipment, fell in love with the equipment, bought that, and then just, we use it kind of unconventionally. We don't really use it the way most of the businesses use it, but I still get to make the odd headstone, so that makes me happy. But yeah, that's kind of how it started.
I'm imagining this employee in the store in BC just standing there looking at the white truck's back again. Just parked in a parking
lot. Van full of kids is sitting out front again. Do you remember that place, Seth?
No, I don't.
You don't? Right on the side of the highway in Falkland, there was this little headstone shot. I don't know. I like cool headstones. It's weird, I know. But yeah, that's where. So it kind of goes back to that. But then, yeah, in the summers, we kind of go walk around some of these old cemeteries and just look at some of the cool headstones. So, yeah.
There's some cool, like, ornate designs, and especially in the older headstones. Like, I think a lot of some of the work that's done in, like, Quebec City in Quebec, like, some of the buildings and some of the headstones there, and like mm-hmm. it's just really cool to look at, and you don't even think about the context behind it. You're just inspired by the design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of really, really, really cool ones out there. And I remember being told years ago that the last time your spirit lives on earth is the last time someone says your name. So it was always kind of a thing to go to the cemeteries, and you go to kind of some of those really old ones, and you just say their names so that they get to have their name said out loud again. I know it's kind of a weird, quirky thing, but to go look at some of these headstones and wonder what the story was behind, and especially the ones that have got some design to them, and clearly somebody really loved them. It's just kind of a cool thing. So we did start for the Irma Cemetery. We did all their unmarked graves. So they've really let me have some artistic freedom to make some just really cool little granite headstones to put on the ones that have been left unmarked for years and years and years. And so that's kind of cool. Like the ones that are babies, we've been able to put some, you know, really cute little baby designs on it and pretty writing. And so it's not just a forgotten grave. It means something. So hopefully someone comes along and it says their name, and yeah, it's, you know, kind of a weird thing I do, I guess.
Curiosity gets the best of me here. From like breaking into that market. And it's fascinating to me too, because having been to a number of cemeteries and more recently, more often, unfortunately, but just seeing the headstones and seeing what's available and having been through that process, it's surprising to me that the big headstone people, because the challenge is the customer effectively doesn't get to choose, you know, their product at the end of their life. But the fascinating thing is like with these big headstone companies, how they wouldn't allow market penetration when at the end of the day, your local funeral home is kind of directing the families towards their choice in the matter. And Lord knows the pricing on headstones is unfathomable at times. So just having some sort of like creative and artistic influence on the ability to do that, I feel like that's a fascinating thing. And it's surprising mm-hmm. to me that, you know, that it's as challenging as it is to get into.
It is. And I got lucky. Now I've kind of gone more to the urns. I've been doing a lot of the urns. And so it's right down to carving the ones that I've carved to the ones that we've done granite urns. There's now a local supplier in town here that has made some to bring into us that I can laser and then I hand paint. So that's actually kind of cool. As much as the headstones are a really neat thing that I still would love to do, but the sheer size and the moving the, you know, the granite and all of that, actually doing the heads, they're doing the urns has ended up being, I think, better. Like I just did one for someone who designed it for herself because she was dying. So the family called me today to say she got it, she liked it, and then she passed the next day or two after. And so something like that I can't explain what that feels like. Like to know she designed it, she picked the images, her nephew made the urn, just a beautiful urn. And then for me to be able to put those images she wants on and hand paint them and design them, and to know she's now in that, it's kind of a cool thing. It's actually, I think, ended up being more powerful than in some ways than the headstones would be, because that's their final resting place. And I've been able to do my grandmother's, my husband's done his grandma's and grandpa's, and it's pretty cool to be able to make that. I mean, the family said, why are you putting all this work into something that's going in the ground? It's like, if I can give my grandmother a final resting place that I feel encapsulates her beauty, then I don't care how much work it is. So yeah. So it's a pretty kind of cool thing. It's to start at one end in that industry, but to end up going even a more personal thing has ended up, I think, will make me happier in the end. So
I will say, I was not planning on talking about headstones today. That was not the direction I thought we would.
No, we would take. And most people, when they ask how did you start, that's exactly where it started. So yeah, it's a weird starting point, I got to tell you.
But it's amazing though too, when you start a project or you have, you know, being artistic and you start somewhere, just the number of times that you pivot over the course of time mm-hmm. to kind of end up where you are here, where, you know, that artistic part that you had thought about, that revenue piece that, you know, was originally your kind of your business thought, still exists and it's still part of mm-hmm. your business. but just the number of, you know, directions that you've been able to pivot from there is interesting too. So maybe tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that even comes down to our name, because everybody always, I've been told a couple times, what a stupid name, it's a mouthful. But Beyond a Beaten Path, I didn't want to be Laura's Lasering or Aaron's Trophies, or I didn't want to ever pigeon it into, this is what we will do for the rest of time. So that's where we went with the name, that I can go any direction I want to go. And that's kind of what it is. Like there's, I can still carve something if I want to carve. I can laser if I want to laser. We have a CNC if I want a CNC. Like there's so many different aspects we've had so that we don't ever have to be pigeoned into, I do this one thing for the rest of my life. And so I would love to be able to pivot a million more times, you know, like that's definitely keeps me interested, because if I had to stand there and do the same thing every day, it'd be shuttered and closed and I'd have moved on long ago. So I think you have to in any business. I mean, I get it, if you make sprockets, then that's all you make and you're Bob Sprockets and that's all you're going to do. That's one thing. But yeah, I never want to be that.
Spacely Sprockets.
Spacely Sprockets.
Actually, that makes me laugh, because there's on the Henday in Edmonton, there's this place called the Spindle Factory. And it's just a giant spindle factory for tables and chairs.
Are you open to potentially another name idea that I just came up with?
Oh, good God. What have you come up with?
Mothron's Laser Emporium.
Mothron's Laser Emporium. Once again, a mouthful. I'm not sure if I feel the mystique of it, but it's down the road. Maybe it'll be a branch off.
It'll play well with the lasers with the sharks on their heads.
It would. You always have wanted me to have lasers with sharks on their, or sharks with lasers on their heads. You have always...
Lasers with sharks on their heads. I'm open. Either of those things would be fine. What have you, I mean, what are you on now? Year five, six, seven?
Tenth year?
Eight?
Tenth? What? Yeah, well, next year's 10. This is 9. Next year,
I'm just throwing out random years.
Random. Next year will be 10. We incorporated in 2014. So next year's number 10.
Wow. What is the... what's the biggest learning you've had over that 10 years? Like that's a long time to be in business.
Well, that is a long time to be in business and growing like every year, knock on wood, it's busier than the year before. What have I learned? I hate sanding. I still hate sanding. I hated sanding when I started this and I hate sanding even more now. it's learning to be adjustable. Like I can go from fixing a $60,000 laser machine, troubleshooting it because I'm hoping this will fix my problem, to trying to put together a name badge. Like it's being able to be versatile. It's being able to do 6 jobs at once. And I mean, as a mom, I think you always end up multitasking, but this has definitely taken it to a whole other level. So I think that's the biggest thing I've learned, is just that being able to switch instantly from spray painting this to doing this to, yeah.
What was harder? Like,
I had to learn to quit throwing things.
What has challenged you more? This 10-year period of starting a business and everything that's come with that, growing it, et cetera. You know, you've moved locations, you've added different products, you started with tombstones, you know, now you're doing very intricate custom crib boards, et cetera. Or like the 10-year period when we were all teenagers growing up in the
raising
house.
Your brother wins everything. There will, if anything in life ever tests me like raising Cody, then I would be mind boggled.
was there anything that you pulled from that's actually been fairly applicable to running
your
business?
How not to kill people, really. I guess that's the biggest thing. Raising a special needs kid, the number one thing you learn is to pick your battles. And that's probably been the biggest thing I've taken in business. It's picking your battles. What is worth standing your ground on? Is this the hill I'm going to die on? It's got to be worthy of that. And I think that's the number one thing, being a parent in general, but especially with Cody. It's picking the battle. It's got to be worth the fight. It's got to be worth the tears, because there's lots of tears. There's as much tears in this business as there was, I think, racing you guys. But it's just picking the battle, knowing that it's worth the fight. The things that I've redone that everyone else is going, why in the hell are you redoing that? Well, because it matters to me that this thing is off, and I've got to, this is a battle to me that's worth fighting. So, and it's those other things that have come along where Aaron's stressed out about it, or Kate's stressed out about it. And I'm like, that's not worth it's not worth your time. Don't worry about it. So I think that's the one thing that's transferred from raising him to doing this.
Something in there reminded me of your mom saying, JP, what is it?
There's two types of things in the world. There's, you know, the things that you can't do anything about and you don't need to worry about them because there's nothing you can do about them anyways. And then there's the things you can do something about. You mm-hmm. don't have to worry about them because you can do something about it.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it. Yeah, that's it. So I think, that's my biggest one. It's just picking my battle.
In picking those battles, especially in customer service, like, you know, the challenges of, you know, not only creating something internally and suppliers and having patience with kind of everything on the back end. And then there's also having patience with the customer facing side too. So it's not only, you know, the customers are typically always right and fair to them because they're spending the money on the product. But in certain cases, I was just going to kind of relate to the hill to die on is sometimes the battle is not worth the, not worth the kind of the pushback and the result of that pushback. So we do a good job of biting our tongues sometimes. The one thing I was going to ask you in terms of like just the diversity in products that you guys offer and kind of the artistic creative portion to that, is there anything that surprised you that you maybe thought you'd bring in, you know, wasn't all that successful and it became, became a hit, or it became something that, that was just kind of off the cuff, that, you know, a decision that was made and all of a sudden it became a staple in a business such as yours?
Probably the curb boards. Those, I don't even think we made our first one till we had been, we were still on downtown location, but we were at least two or three years in the first time we were asked to make one. And I knew how to play crib, and then it was the shape of a buffalo. And so there was this whole learning curve to it, to figuring out holes and the layout and all of that. And shockingly, that's the thing. That's the thing that I can't believe how it's taken off. Like last time we counted, we were at over 300 designs. That's not boards. That's designs. And some of these designs, like the guitars, I've probably made 50 guitars, you know, like, and of one of the designs and hockey ones and everything. So I wish I'd kept a count of the amount of crib boards I actually created, because it's well into the hundreds. If I've done 300 designs, and the amount I've created are probably well over 500. But I think for me, that's the biggest one. And I know my husband's always kind of like, because he thinks they're very labor intensive. You don't really make back the cost of what they are because of so much work.
I'll just say it right now. Like, I don't think you charge enough for them.
Oh, you're always telling me I don't charge enough for them. And they have gone up, like, especially on Etsy. Etsy's, you know, like, that they've definitely, we're getting a lot of return purchases for, you know, somebody that's going on their fourth crib board that they've ordered from us from around the world. We ship them everywhere. We've shipped Germany, Australia, like all over the place. So it's a growing thing. And like, he would happily discontinue them tomorrow, but I love making them. Like, they're a lot of fun, and they're different.
They're an art piece. They really are. I mean,
yeah,
that's the thing. And
like, to the point of them getting you more business, do you leverage them as a bit of a loss leader, like something that brings in more business to other types of products and whatnot?
Probably not as much. We're definitely trying to branch more into games. Like, games are surprisingly really popular, especially on Etsy. Like, we do the Frustration Rummy, we do the baseball dice, we do the crib boards, we do the pegs and jokers. We've now designed a golf one. It's a golf dice game, and we designed this one right from scratch. Baseball dice is kind of based on another design that's out there. The golf dice we've done straight from scratch. I think it's probably was ready to go out in the store and online last fall, but I just, because we were so busy, I kind of put on the back burner. So I'm hoping to launch it this spring, but it's ended up pretty cool. I think it's a pretty cool game, and I would love to get more into making more games, because I think that's, like, I've had a request for chess boards. My biggest issue is the pieces, because I'm a bit of a control freak and perfectionist about the pieces, and I'm trying to figure out how I want to do those because I don't have time to carve them. So I would love to at some point be 90% games, like just come up with really cool, neat games. But I have all these other orders I gotta fill to pay the bills to get to that point. So,
well, maybe you can work out a deal with FTR Golf, a golf dice in every cup holder if you order a new card.
We'll be definitely setting aside a couple of
those. I know somebody.
We'll definitely be setting aside a couple of those games.
Yeah, well, we've gotten the works to do the hockey dice, because the dice games, like the baseball dice, is I cannot even count how many we ship out. Like, we ship out so many of the baseball dice games. And so much that we actually got copied by China, which was kind of a compliment, actually. Yeah, you should.
It's like the highest compliment it possible. Is. It's yeah, I can see how it would anger you at the same time as being like, yeah,
it is. Man, they're doing the styrofoam. It there. Like, ours is actual high quality Baltic birch. Theirs was styrofoam, and they spelt visitors wrong on it. But they actually took the photos right from our website. That my hand is in the pictures because I was holding it in the picture.
Like, that was like a whole thing, though. Like, didn't a pissed off customer yeah. reach out to you and like, what the hell is this crap?
Yeah. A guy from Minnesota had ordered one from them for $25. Mine are not $25. And mine are real wood. And this, he gets this styrofoam thing. So he reached out and he goes, I think you guys should know that I think you've been hacked or stolen or something. So we got looking into it. And sure enough, this site was selling these knockoffs of ours using our actual pictures, even though what people were getting were just styrofoam. And so we actually ended up sending him a board of ours, and we put his son's baseball teams on the dugouts and did him a custom board to thank him for letting us know. There was nothing we could do about it. Like, you can't shut it down. You can't stop it. But it was
He ended up being a customer too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. We've actually gotten quite a few orders out of Minnesota courtesy of him. So
we'll reach out to the CBSA and get a measures in force on the baseball dice.
There you go.
So if they bring them into Canada, they get tariffed by 400%.
Yeah, it was one of those things that you're frustrated, but at the same time, kind of complimented. We've been stolen. So that's obviously they saw it was doing well. So
it's been an interesting path from tombstones, custom grid boards,
all the things in between, I would say.
It was not.
No. As you're heading into your 10th year, 11th year, sort of into that, you know, fairly mature stage of the business, where do you kind of see taking things? I know you mentioned you want to get heavily into games. You guys do a lot of awards, custom mugs, which I think we all have our, I haven't given JP his yet, but those custom mugs are fantastic. Where are you kind of seeing taking this whole thing?
It's hard. It's in a dream world, I buy a piece of property on a lake and I sit and just make what I want, sell it online and on a roadside stand. And let's face it, that's probably not terribly realistic.
Sounds like a Dixie Chick song or something.
That's right. That's right. Just, I really want to concentrate on the next few years of doing more of what I like doing. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff I do that I think I really could be doing something else. It's a little more meaningful than sanding this stupid thing I don't want to sand or whatever it is.
It all goes back to sand.
Oh, you have no idea how much I hate sanding.
I'm getting a sense of it, yes.
Getting a feel for the... And so what do I do? Become a carver. That's really smart. Be a carver when you hate sanding. Finding more time to do the things I want to do is really what I want to do down the road. Right now we're doing the big donor wall for the hospital to thank everyone at the CT scanner. So it's a big, big job. So it's hard because it takes up all your time. It's hard to find time to do the little stuff. But yeah, down the road, that's what I'd like to do more of. Just stuff I like doing. So
I think Sean emceed that event.
I did.
Yeah.
One of the events.
Diamonds are forever.
Yeah. We're working on the wall as we speak. So
we talk about your lasering so much. I'm just picturing Aaron taking this giant laser and holding it so that it's like pointed at the wall.
Not quite.
Like a sundial?
Yeah.
A little more sophisticated.
This is only going to take 2.5 hours. Just stand still.
No, we got two now. We've got a big one with the pass through, the 400. It does a pass through so I can do like a door or, you know, big things like that. And then I've now got a second one, which is a little one that Caitlin runs, so she's got her own. And then we've got the CNC we just bought a year and a half ago, but I think we've used it all of 4 times because nobody has time to learn how to use it. And so it's grown from just the one machine. So I would like to get another one. I'd like to get a fiber, but my bank account says otherwise. So I think that's the problem. Everything's gone up. You have no idea what that's done to the laser market.
All the more reason to get some sharks with lasers on their head. Get them working.
Make my own. That's right. I'm going to make my homemade lasers.
I think another interesting thing I wanted to just touch on here while we have you. By the way, I did some research just to see how long ago we started the Biz Dojo in terms of days. And the first artist rendering of the original Biz Ninjas sketch was 960 days ago. So I know, Mother, I told you that you were going to be in like the first season, and took a couple days to get things stable.
Took a few. I remember you saying, they say you shouldn't have family on in the first few. And I think you've had six family members before me.
Well, we're here now.
We did have some, I think it was a chopping it up, wasn't it?
I did. We did the bear one. Remember the bear one? That was our best chopping up.
Oh, that was funny. That with the three, with the Mike Ditka and the Mike Bibby. Yeah, that was
good. The bears. That was pretty funny. Yes.
And to be fair, like we struggled for like 15 minutes to try to get on here with getting mics working. So even after like almost 1,000 days,
when you say we, let's be specific. I had zero trouble getting on here with my mic.
It was all Sean, but I digress. One of the things we've been branching out into is getting involved in the community, and one of the organizations we've been talking to and hopefully going to coordinate some kind of event with is the High Bank Society. We connected with them at the Bracco Christmas thing.
Parade of Christmas Trees.
Parade of Christmas Trees. That's it. And I don't know. I didn't realize the important work they were doing in the community. They help moms sort of that 16 to 24 years old that are escaping some sort of trauma, poverty, et cetera. And it just never occurred to me until I was kind of sitting in that office that that's basically where you came from, some version of that. And I just wonder, like, when you kind of sit back and look at where you came from to where you are now, like, any words of encouragement or thoughts for others that are maybe just starting to embark on that journey?
Don't give up. Crying's okay. Let the tears out. I was 17 when you were born. So yeah, I've been 17 for 3 weeks. I'd been 19 for 3 weeks when Cody was born, and I was 20 when Kaya was born. So yeah, I was a grade 10 dropout with three kids by 20, and then I had the twins by 25, and I didn't drive. I didn't have an education. I didn't have anything. I now have a college diploma. I drive. There was times where I envied everybody for everything. Like when you guys were growing up, like I felt like nothing. I mean, you're compared to a scale that I wasn't even on the scale, you know, to be an uneducated teen mom with all these kids and then Cody being disabled. And you wonder why you bother, like why get up? Cause today is just going to be folding the same laundry you folded yesterday. And to look at these women who had a career and an education and could get in a car and go drive. And I mean, I didn't get my driver's license until I was 36. So it's no matter what you think of yourself, you got to get past that. I look back at who I was and I look back at how I thought and what I felt. And I get so mad at her. I want to just smack her and go like, you can do better than this and you will do better. You just got to get out of your own way sometimes. And so, yeah, I mean, any kid out, the girl out there that's struggling with that, like I thought I was just going to drown in that life. And the days you just sat and cried are just immeasurable, but they got me to where I am. So they have value. Yeah. And I mean, my kids ended up okay. And we're all
there's a lesson in that though. Just around anybody who's experiencing or going through some, you know, some challenging times in their life, is that you got to feel what you're feeling and get it out and express it, whether it's on your own or with people that you love. You get into more trouble hanging on to that stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's been a kind of a huge part of my spiritual journey. Like not every day has been a great day, but, you got to just feel those things mm-hmm. and you got to get them out. And, it's just part of the journey yep. of understanding kind of what your own emotional intelligence looks like. So yeah.
It was a big thing, especially with Cody, because I didn't have any other friends who had kids like Cody, and I didn't have a support system, and I didn't have anyone to explain why he did what he did and why I felt like I felt. And then it was the guilt of seeing the other four kids having to try to live in this chaos. And it was getting Cody from today to tomorrow without the whole world falling down, and everybody's advocating, you know, you need to go send him to deaf school and you need to, but I couldn't give up because how does that make him any less important than everyone else? And I was just so young and unprepared and didn't have the resources. And yeah, I look back and think I should have been screaming off the rooftop for help. Like somebody help me. Like I don't know what I'm doing, But I think at that time, I didn't think anybody would listen or care or hear, or, and I didn't have the strength to climb up on the roof. So anyone out there that's like that, you gotta find your voice, because it could have ended much differently than it did. So it's tough. Yeah. And that's why I walked around graveyards reading headstones. Sadly, that was a highlight of my day.
Well, I think we talk about it. I know, you know, Seth and I have been through some coaching programs, and we certainly talk about it there and with clients and whatnot. But sometimes you get so focused on that thing that you want that's probably a year out or 2 years out that you don't see that you really should just focus on what, you know, what can I make better today, or what can I make better in the next 15 minutes? Like, what are those small steps? Because those small steps are what adds up. It's, you know, Seth has been on a physical wellness journey. It's no different than that, right? Like, you're not going to lose 20 pounds overnight. If you could, first of all, you'd make a lot of money because you could sell that very easily, because there's a lot of people looking for that. But like, it's just not going to happen that way. It happens by putting yourself in a position where you can struggle through some of the pain and whatnot that comes sometimes, and enjoy those, you know, brief moments of success and work your way through it.
And that's one thing Cody taught me is getting through this minute right now. There, we couldn't think of what will life be like a week from now, a year from now, a month from now. It was, how do I get him from 5 to 5:15, you know, eating his supper and not having a meltdown and not having life fall apart and not, and I remember the school getting so mad at me. He needs to be doing this every night. It's like, I need to get him home and be able to get him to finish the day without the whole house falling apart. So he taught me how to do that. That's the battles. It's the how to go, you know what? No, I don't think that book report's going to matter. I need to let him go sit outside and play in the dirt for an hour, because he needs that more than he needs the book report done. So it's learning that. So that's the greatest gift he gave me, is that not worrying about necessarily 6 months down the road. You need to worry about getting through today sometimes. So
that's kind of a business lesson too, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. That's where I think I struggle a little bit with the down the road, because I need to worry about getting this done right now. So I don't worry so much about down the road. It's getting this stack of jobs done so that I can move on to the next stack of jobs. But I do need to learn to look forward, because it's easy to get caught in that, just seeing that little bit ahead of time now. So now I need to learn how to look further ahead, because, yeah, you do. You get caught in that sometimes. Too short-sighted. So, yeah.
Do you reckon you'll purchase any more livestock in your...
I would love to. I'm cow poor. I cry every day because I'm cow poor. I have no cows. I have zero cows. I tell my husband that every day. Zero cows. I am cow poor. I would like to be cow rich. I am not cow rich. So I could see there being livestock.
Cow rich by a lake, selling your stuff by the side of the road.
I'll tie a sign around Bessie's neck and she can just stand on the side of the road.
Sitting on Bessie, just painting pictures in your field beside the
lake.
That's
my dream. I would love more livestock. I love livestock.
I'll send you some photos of the progress pics with my little cow.
Oh, you got cows? Oh.
I don't know if Sean's like fully in the loop of our livestock history. I don't know if this
is he'll have to go back and listen to me.
Yeah, we need to get more listens. So let's send him the episodes that he needs to go listen to together.
Maybe just as like a little teaser, you can tell him the story of Romeo the Ram.
My husband at the time, my late husband, he was a city boy from Ontario, and we moved to a small acreage in Lumbee, BC, and we used to go to the Armstrong auction on a regular basis, and he got it into his head. He got all excited because he had gone and he made his first purchase. So we're there with my grandpa and the twins were just babies at the time. So we go over, and here he has purchased a ram with a full curl. A ram from McDonald's petting zoo in Kelowna. A ram who, if you were not petting him, would destroy everything in sight till somebody was petting him. So my poor grandfather's like, but you have no sheep. What do you need a ram for? And so anyways, he loaded the ram in a minivan without tinted windows and had bought a potbelly pig the same day. And we drove to the city of Vernon with a ram at the full curl staring out the back window of the minivan. and took it home, where it proceeded to knock down every fence, smash in every door, try to get in the house, knock kids over fences. He must be being petted at all times, or he was just going to.
And I do love how this impulse purchase of the ram led to me somehow having to take care of it as a 12-year-old.
Yes, I recall your sister coming flying out of the barn one day because Romeo had knocked her flying out of the barn. I remember one day the pounding at the back door, and when I opened it, the ram had backed up to come again to try to come through the door because he wanted someone to pet him. Because he was raised in a petting zoo where that's all they did was pet him. Yes, needless to say, he went back to the auction.
I was going to say, one of many curious purchases in that time period, and I didn't know whatever happened to him, so he went back to the auction.
He did go back to the auction, yes.
He went back to the auction, or like, he went back to the auction?
No, he actually went back to the auction. Chris loaded him in a minivan, and he went back to the auction. It's like, before somebody dies, he needs to go back to the auction.
He was a little too rammy.
Yes.
Shout out to Dodge Caravans. Very ambidextrous vehicles that are capable of many things.
The versatility.
Versatility. The things we hold.
Ambidextrous or versatile? That was going to be my question.
It's
it
both.
Can turn left
it's
or both. Right. They've done a real good job with that product.
But he bought that blind turkey by accident and it gave you all nightmares. And then the time he decided he was going to free range chickens and bought 100 baby chicks. And then the cow proceeded to lay on them all and kill them all. We had dead chickens everywhere. All the foxes and raccoons were like, woohoo, idiots. And they just poached them all till we had five. And he was going to do rabbits, but he didn't fill the bottom in, and they dug out. And
well, no, that weasel got in and killed them all.
Or something went in or out, but the rabbits were gone. Yeah, a farmer, he was not.
I just, like, as I sit here and we, you know, regale on these tales, I just don't understand what the point was.
I don't think any of us understood the point of it. At the time he got paid with an old milk cow, that was his paycheck when he was working for that feed mill, and they didn't have money to pay him, so they gave him an old milk cow that didn't have milk anymore. And Lulu, I love Lulu. She was a sweetheart, but absolutely useless. She was an old Guernsey, skinny old cow. So,
Sean, have you ever been paid in a cow?
No. Nope.
Yeah.
Can't say I have.
Yeah. No.
Although I've been paid in frozen cow.
No, she was alive. And she was pregnant. They bred her with a Black Angus. So the calf that she was pregnant with was so big, there was no way those skinny little Guernsey hips were ever letting that calf out. So the $1,000 vet bill to have the C-section to get the cow out, yeah, that didn't go well. She was in labor and she would not, there was like 6 feet of snow on the ground. And she decided the only way she'd lay down is if her head was in my lap. So I had to sit out in a snowbank, and the vet told him, don't let her get up. If it's keeping the cow down, let her make her stay there. So I sat out there for like 4 hours waiting for a vet to show up to try to do a C-section on this cow, because every time I tried to get up, she tried to get up. So, yeah, then the vet bill was astronomical to get the Black Angus calf out of this Jersey cow. Yeah, that's why he got paid in cow. He got paid with the doorknob once, too. Not even lying. He came home with a doorknob. He's like, well, they couldn't afford to pay me, but we needed a new doorknob on the back, so they gave me this. And it wasn't even new. It was used.
That thing looks like it's been turned already, hun.
There's no packaging and key. There's no key for it.
They
had his number.
I mean, that it's all a form of commerce, I guess. Doesn't sound like he won too many of those deals.
Also, I got Topsy the horse. He got paid with the horse that time too. That was dying.
Also had a black.
That's how he got her. I would not have been surprised with the way these guys did things. It would not have shocked me. But she had colic and died. So yeah, that was another big vet bill because that had to come out for that.
This is skimming the surface, Sean. Just. the wildlife and livestock stories. This is just the top thin layer.
It is. It is.
Could probably be its own podcast.
We should do one day the livestock obsessed life. We do a whole lot of pod. I probably have pictures of everybody I can share.
Yeah, the pigs, the goats, the mini goats.
I have pictures of all of them. I actually do. I have more pictures of them than of you guys.
I was going to say, I don't know of many pictures of me in that time period.
I have. I found this whole envelope. And it was a big stack. And it's all just pictures of the animals we had.
Oh, is that a gorilla? No, that's Seth.
Lyndon has an emotional support mouse, we call it. You know, that's his little guy, Nugget, that kind of keeps him like balanced. And he likes it. And it's all good. You had an emotional support farm, basically.
I did.
I think that might have been the whole point of the whole thing.
It was. The guinea pig. Seth thought somebody in the family had died.
Oh, my God.
The dog killed the guinea pig, and I was hysterical. I called the school, and he thought someone had died. That was because the dog had killed the guinea pigs, and I was a little upset.
new podcast, Seth Stock, will be coming to you.
Just curious, we've got the bonus Soapworks question of the week, which is, what is your favorite song?
Oh, good God. I got lots of them. I have too many. I like lots of songs. It depends on my mood.
You got to pick one. What's your mood right now? Because we're going to put it on our season 6 playlist.
Seasons in the Sun. Find that one. That's a good song. That's a good old... happy, sad, somebody's dying, miserable. That's just a good song.
That's one of those.
That's a song to help you sand right there.
It is.
It gets you through the sanding.
Sanding. No, it's more headbanging stuff because I'm so mad that I need to vent, frustrated if I have to freaking sand something.
Sanding in the sun, if you will.
Sanding in the sun. There you go. No, I'd listen to some Shine Down, heavy Shine Down if I have to sand. But that's a good one. Seasons in the Sun is probably one of my, from my childhood, I just remember it being one of my favorite songs when I was a kid.
If I were to pick one for my mother, it is absolutely "I Would Do Anything for Love" by Meatloaf.
No, we're mad at you.
Well, I'm just saying, you listen to it.
Meatloaf.
Like, you would actually, on a cassette tape, like, stop it and rewind it and play it again. Like, that's how much you love that song.
I would. See, when I was a kid, my mom didn't read us stories. She played Meatloaf, and we would all just sing along. So that was like our bedtime story, was listening to Bat Out of Hell. So I knew all the words to the Bat Out of Hell album by the time I was like 8 years old, because that's all she did was play that. That was our bedtime stories. So I know all the Meatloaf. I'm just really mad at him.
Well, the funny thing is, you basically did the same thing with me, but just Appetite for Destruction. So.
You were a little Guns N' Roses. I got to find the old Seth singing his Guns N' Roses. He could do the serpentine. He had the headband. Yeah, you were all out Axl Rose. The first time you ever sang Guns N' Roses for Nana and Grandpa, that was an experience. I don't think they knew what. They thought it was so cute, but the words were just...
Well, hopefully I wasn't singing like My Michelle or Mr. Brownstone.
Never know. You did listen to all of it, so you had such a good little
lesson. Learned a lot about life at a very young age. Anyway, thank you for coming. Thank you for dropping by the virtual dojo. We appreciate you, and
thanks for inviting me, finally.
The passive aggressive exit. I love it.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Mother.
Take care, guys.